is Nathan, Nat and Sean.
Well, this particular podcast is chock full of guests, everybody. We catch up with comedian Tom Gleeson.
Yes. We always have. We have Fremantle coach Ross Lyon, and he towers me up, really.
You deserve it, though, to be fair.
Good toweling up with something different. We go pillaging with Clive Standen, who plays Rollo from Vikings.
Former international cricketing legend Adam Gilchrist talks about motorsport. Makes sense.
Yeah. Dennis Irwin, Manchester United champ, he joins us as well.
Yep, and we replay Dee from Hammersley, one of our wonderful listeners. She tells us a story about a missing vacuum cleaner. And then we discuss things that just vanish. Enjoy.
This is Nathan, Nat and Sean.
What a huge weekend we've got here in Perth. The Manchester United legends are taking on the PFA Aussie legends at Nib Stadium. 6:30, of course, at Nib Stadium, as I said. Tickets from ticketmaster.com.au. But we've got a legend of the Manchester United. Dennis Irwin himself has walked into the studio. G'day, Dennis.
G'day.
Oh, my God.
Dennis. How do you do?
I don't know. What do we do? Do we pray? Or do we like get down and...
Do we bow down?
What do we do?
No, cup of coffee be good.
Cup of coffee. Ah, well, you've come to Nova, wrong place. Hey, I just want to start off with something, right? So, researching you, I have never come across another person that has as many fake Twitter accounts as what there is for you.
I'm old school. I don't bother with that. It's all rubbish.
Mate, my favourite one is this one here. So, this is Dennis Irwin. I used to play football for the Republic of Ireland and Man United. Now, I take long walks and also collect vintage miniature replicas of post offices.
I have heard that before.
Yeah. Confirm or deny?
Deny. Big time. There's nothing wrong with miniature post offices, I don't think.
If you're into that sort of thing.
There, yeah.
Now, you're playing? You're playing the Legends match. When was the last time you had a run around and a kick? Is it a regular thing that you do?
We tend to play about one or two charity matches a year. Yeah. But the most of the lads will play a little five-a-side or keep themselves fit by going to the gym. So we're still hanging in there.
You're good to go.
Yeah, good to go.
At your physical peak.
I've got younger ones to do a lot of running for me.
Yeah.
And I'll provide the brains.
Well, you know what? Sean's the same. Like, since he stopped playing AFL, he's keeping on it, like making sure that he keeps fit. How many of your ex-teammates have blown out?
Not many.
Yeah.
I think.
That makes it worse for the ones that it did.
The ones that did blew out properly as well, by the way.
All or nothing.
Good luck to them, yeah. No, I think because the way football in generally has gone over the last 10, 15, 20 years, I think gone much more professional. And instead of a physio just doing every physio in the time 25 years ago when I played, did everything, now you got a person who does weights, rehabilitation, so what to eat, what to drink. So I think I got the back end of that, so I've kind of looked after myself, and the majority of players I've played with have looked after themselves as well. They go to the gym regularly, go running, keep themselves fit, look after what they eat. So it's a new generation of, I don't know, boring old sods, you can call us if you want.
A lot of people I speak to about current day Australian rules football would say, you know, almost robotic in the way they go about everything these days.
Professionally,
I know. I think it's a bit harsh on the people who play today. Yeah. That's what they're expected to do.
Yeah,
but
of course, yeah.
They make the money, though, Sean, don't they?
Absolutely, yeah.
Hey, Dennis, talk to us about the days playing under
Sir Alex,
Fergie. And, of course, with the team and the lineup you had, you know, Schmeichel's in the goal. One of my favourites was Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. He used to come off the bench and score, like, five goals in 2 seconds. Are you Beckhams and all those types of guys that you play with?
I mean, I'm privileged to play with the players you've mentioned there for 12 years.
Ryan Giggs, I forgot.
Giggsy, Robbo, Brian Robson. But great time to play football. Manchester United were in the doldrums, I suppose, for quite a number of years. So timing is everything in life. And I got the best time at Manchester United between 1990 and 2002 under a magnificent manager who was strict, but away from that persona of him being over strict, what the media like to throw at him. He was very compassionate, very funny, and we had some good times with him. But he demanded that you give your best when you played football, and that was simple as you tried your hardest, and he was happy with that.
So at training sessions, with that kind of talent that you had, did you go hell for leather at each other to lift?
Absolutely.
During that?
Absolutely. You train as you play. I think the old adage of, like, I think even before my time, I think it was more chilled out. I think certainly when I came to Manchester Manchester United, it was quite vicious, and that's the way it should be, I think. There weren't as many foreigners played back then. It was either English, Irish, Scottish or Welsh, and maybe the odd Scandinavian. And we used to have little five-a-sides of England v the Celts, and that got pretty serious, as you can imagine. But no, it was, the training was taken serious. The football was taken serious. We had a bit of fun away from that. It was still the era where you still enjoyed yourself away from football. Like anything now, everything's super professional and it's very hard for
most. Social media, mate.
Yeah, social media.
Social media.
Yeah. Camera phones and everything. So we had a bit of fun along those lines, but we certainly trained hard and worked hard.
Hey, back in when you were playing, what were the crowds like? Because these days we see some people going mental with flares and all this sort of stuff. Was the crowd more subdued back then?
No, it was more feral.
Yeah, absolutely.
Standing room only. I mean, the stadiums now are great. They're all seated and that, but it's taken away a little bit of atmosphere, I think.
Yeah, as a player, what was that like?
It was great, honestly. Yeah, I mean, our rivals, our biggest rivals at the time, and probably still are, Liverpool. I mean, you used to go to Anfield and get dogs abuse when you went there, but that was part and parcel of being a footballer, and you got to embrace it, you got to enjoy it. If you can't play under that pressure, you shouldn't really be there.
Yeah.
Were you only ever going to be a footballer, Dennis, or did you?
No, I grew up in Cork in Ireland trying to be, I don't know if you know, hurling.
Hurling, that's with the stick, it's brilliant.
So I grew up as a Cork man.
David Beckham is probably one of the biggest names that ever played football. Is it interesting to play with someone like that and then follow his journey and see how it became like a rock star? Because he's probably the first genuine rock star.
Yeah,
almost.
Well, he had a Cantona became.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back in the 60s and 70s, I think George Best. I think they were rock stars back then. But yeah, David Beckham is probably the most worldwide known.
Did you pick it when you first met him? Like when he first turned up as a young bloke?
Not at all. No, I mean, it was quiet, very quiet. London boy, came up, did extremely well for himself at Manchester United, moved on to Real Madrid, went across to America, which everybody thought at the time was a bit of a strange move because, you know, height of your career and you go across there. But I mean, it's Brand Beckham now, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
I mean, he's just enormous wherever he goes and that.
What about Eric Cantona? Because when he played for United and then he got himself in trouble and stuff like that, but he was able to do mercurial stuff.
Yeah, I mean, he was probably the first player I saw that did things that I'd never seen before. He was different. He came in 92. There wasn't an awful lot of French players in the league at the time. In fact, there was only, as I said before, there was English, Irish, Scottish and Welsh and probably a few Scandinavians. But so he was a bit of a marquee, a maverick he was, very confident in his own ability, even to the point of arrogance, I suppose, and all that. And I think the club suited him and he suited the club. And he was at the beginning of when it really took off. So he's remembered very fondly by Manchester United fans. Eric the King, they call him. They got to sing about him, song about him. So. Now, and he's an actor now.
Yeah. Is he? Oh,
is he? Yeah.
How
about that?
Sure. This is Nathan, Nat and
Sean. Yesterday, we were having a chat about technology becoming too advanced after Sean's family had been locked out of his oven.
Can I just give you an update on that? So they went to come yesterday. My wife said, can you not come between 11 and 12?
Yep.
And they give you from 7 to 12. And so they write on their notes, because I had a go at them, to turn up between 11 and 12. So we missed it. So they can't come till Monday now.
So you're locked out of the oven till Monday?
Yep.
There you go.
Anyway.
No roast for you.
We got a call from Dee from Hammersley, who was talking about her friends who bought one of those robotic vacuum cleaners.
You got one for your mum.
I did. But this didn't happen to my mum. So have a listen to this.
One day they decided to turn it on. They went out for lunch, came back, and it was gone.
Where did it go? Did it leave the house?
Today they have no idea. It was about 3 months ago. They looked everywhere in the house and it just, I don't know, maybe decided to go for a walk.
How dirty is your house when your automatic robotic vacuum cleaner leaves it? Goes, no way.
How funny is that?
There's been a sighting of that vacuum cleaner.
Really?
Yeah, it's been seen training to use a machine gun for Al Qaeda.
It bought 130 guns off the street.
It's got terrorist links. It's terrible.
So A robotic vacuum cleaner just disappears into thin air.
Into thin air. I mean, we know how it got away. It's got wheels. But we don't know what its intention was, what its plans were, what was on its itinerary.
Or why it felt it needed to leave.
It's just gone.
But I'm with you. That house must have been filthy.
It must have been like ill.
They're not cheap.
They're
right?
not. They're like $800.
So they've used it once and that's it.
And
gone
it's just
forever.
Gone like, yeah, see you later. And,
yeah, $800 per vacuum. Not great value.
No.
I swear that the Bermuda Triangle just moves from house to house sometimes and just takes things, and there's no explanation ever for where they've gone. And that's what we want to talk to you about, 13, 24, 10, is something disappeared and it's a mystery and it's gone and you never found out where it's gone.
This is Nathan, Nat and Sean.
We are talking about things that have just disappeared without a trace and you never find them again.
Kip's in Girraween. Hi, Kip.
Oh, hi, guys.
Hey, Kip.
Now, what disappeared without a trace, Kip?
Oh, my laptop.
What?
My MacBook Pro.
No.
Yes. Okay, so where was it? Yeah.
Because I usually leave it in my car and I put it underneath the front seat.
Yes.
So the day before, my brothers and my sisters and I, we went down to the beach and she put it underneath the seat. So I was like, oh, sweet. Next morning, I went in to go grab it.
Yep.
And it wasn't there.
Yes.
And I'm like, hey, where's my laptop gone? So when I asked my little brothers and sisters, they're like, we put it underneath the seat for you.
Yeah.
And then I thought someone might have broken into the car, but my charger was still in the glove box.
Yep.
And I was like, well, and my mouse for it? And I'm like, well, the first thing you do when you break into someone's car, I'm assuming you go through their glove box.
Yes.
There you go.
And if you're going to flog the laptop, I mean, if you've seen the charger in the glove box first,
you're going to take that. Yes.
So you take the whole lot, like, because it's like the MacBook Pro, and I was like, now you're going to have to go buy a charger, which is probably like $100, I'm pretty sure.
That's a bit inconvenient.
And a mouse.
So he's like, you should have just taken all of it, but that's the thing. Like, my little brothers and sisters, like, no, yeah, we put it under the seat when we got out of the car yesterday when we came back from the beach. And
so the car didn't look like it had any damage to it or anything, Kip? It was nothing.
Not at all.
No,
because I park it up the driveway of my mum and dad's house.
Yeah. The week later, did your little brother and sister, were they riding new bikes? Good at cash.
I mean, I think we're going to point some fingers.
But I think it was your thieving siblings.
The ones who put it under the thing.
Hey, Kip, I love your accent too. We're going to see good Kiwis.
I know.
It's
great.
Bloody brilliant.
Ellie's at Mount Hawthorne. Hello.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Ellie.
All right, Ellie. What disappeared without a trace?
Not all of my food, but various amounts of food at different times.
No.
And it wasn't. I would wake, you know, I'd go looking for food that I know was in the fridge or the pantry, and I just couldn't figure out where it had gone, and I knew no one had taken it. It wasn't until I discovered I have a sleep eating disorder.
No way.
In my sleep, and it still happens to this day.
Ellie, can I sleep over one night and watch? I have always...
You know what, Nathan? Yeah. It's hilarious, because when I was living overseas in London for a while, and my friend and I, we shared a room to save money.
Yeah.
And within the first couple of weeks, in the morning, she's like, I heard you last night. And I was like, oh, sorry.
What do you go for? Yeah. What's your go-to when you're doing some sleep eating?
I've had to stop buying chocolate in the last couple of weeks because it's just going.
Mm-hmm.
So it's usually just crap, easy food, chocolate, chips, anything you can just grab. And yeah, sometimes I'll wake up with food in my bed. A couple of weeks ago, I woke up in the middle of the night with a packet of M&M's clasped in my hand.
Ellie, this is hilarious.
What's your coordination like? Could you, like, while you're sleep eating, could you, like, get chips and a dip and be dipping things? Or is it just, like, power, just grabbing things and putting them in your mouth?
I think it's just grabbing and putting in your mouth.
This is Nathan, Nat and Sean.
Fremantle Dockers up against Geelong at home, and their coach Ross Lyon joins us this morning. G'day, Ross.
Good morning, Sean.
Hi, Ross.
Good morning.
Hi, Ross.
Nathan, Nat and Sean, good morning.
It's always a pleasure to catch up with you, Ross.
It is, yes, I know.
Hey, Ross, there's so much to talk about in the footy, but to start with, last night I was driving out about 6:15, and I noticed there was a fitness class directly across the road from your house when I was, like, group fitness class. I drove past, I didn't see you out there.
Correct. You're very observant, Sean.
God, are you just haunted by...
I thought that was you and Megan running some extracurricular activity.
Yeah. Are you just
for the new house.
Are you just haunted by physical activity, Ross? Is it just everywhere that you are?
Michelle Bridges out the front. Commando lives around the corner.
Yeah, just rolling a few tyres past in the morning.
They try and involve me consistently. I just say no.
Stay strong.
Yeah, yeah, stay on your own. Now, it's going to be a huge game, of course. It seems, though, that whenever Fremantle, and I always say we, host Geelong at Subiaco, the game's decided within a kick, so I'm expecting a big performance.
Well, I hope it doesn't go that tight again. But, well, they're a very good team from last year. We really need to improve. So we've had a good summer, and there should be a really good crowd there. There's a lot of excitement around round one. Most people would have tuned in last night and had a look. So it's always great to get off with a win, but we want to really see some growth and some great efforts. So, look, I think the bookies have got them $1.60 favourites, so I think that's a bit overs, but not that the odds mean anything. We think we're in pretty good shape, but it's going to be a stern test.
Well, you see, when you look at Fremantle's midfield, and a lot of people acknowledge with Sandlands, Fife, Mundy, Neil, the Hills, it on paper it looks bloody good.
Yeah, it's strong. It's strong, and they're building to some good form. Aaron and Nathan missed significant amounts of football, so they've taken a while to come to hand, but we feel they're in pretty good shape. And Brad Hill, just that, we weren't the quickest team. He's brought some real speed to us, and real great confidence and belief in himself. So he's been really important to us. And it's allowed us to play Stephen Hill across half-back and through inside mid. So, yeah, he's been a great acquisition.
How's the new headquarters going? Have you got, like, I'm imagining you've got, like, an office better than
palatial.
Donald Trump's.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just, like, old leafed. And
it's the Peppermint Grove of ETAFs around the country, really.
What's your favourite bit about the new headquarters?
Yeah. It's great that it's south of the river.
What's your favourite bit? Is there an executive washroom that only you're allowed to use? Or something
it's
like
all
that?
Marble.
Well, I've actually got my office is adjacent to where everyone walks in, and what I've got, they've put in an opaque, it's probably about 3 metres by 2 metres, but I can hit a button and it goes from see-through to...
So if you're yelling at someone and you don't want everyone else to know, you can hit the button and it blocks it out?
Yes. And so if you walk into my office and I hit that button, you know it's going to be a stern conversation.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing
how
is...
How intimidating.
I guess the other thing too, Ross, is you can press that button, have a bit of a kip, and no one would know.
Take your pants off.
Yeah, I can't wait until the day you take your pants off and then you realise that the button's not working.
It's been a malfunction.
Yeah, press the button first, then take your pants off, all right?
It is a great facility out there, Ross. Over $100 million spent on it. You must be absolutely rapt to be in a facility that allows everybody to work at their best with the best.
No excuses now.
The best equipment.
No excuses, yeah. And look, it's really, we're probably only 50% capacity, and there is a strong community build within that, and that should be open in about 6 weeks. So, but because it's so big, sometimes you have those shared facilities that it might be token, but there's a legitimate, there's a 50-metre outdoor pool, 225-metre indoor, there's a gym, a significant gym that for the community, a water slide. So there's plenty of aspect for the community, and then we branch off to the right of that, and that's a dedicated facility for us. So it's great for the area, and we hope we sort of build some strong support geographically through there, and I know we've got some already. And there's a 6-stadium basketball court that's joined onto it as well, so it's going to be a real blending with the community, and it's really exciting for us.
You know what though, whenever if your workplace moves, you don't know where you're going to go and get lunch and stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like around Fremantle, you know where you're going to go and get your food. Have you scoped out the area enough now and found a good spot to get something to eat? Good sandwich.
Yeah. Look, I'm trying to lose a few pounds, so I love the Mexican salad. I think it's Good Man Gomez there. Outstanding.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
We got one down the road.
Yeah, I think I'll sweep them. Yeah. So I get the lunch set. Look, there's plenty of Coburn Central. There's
good
plenty
coffee.
Of spots.
Have you found
there.
A good coffee? Because Frio renowned for it, obviously.
Mooba Coffee's not too bad. It's certainly... I went into the coffee club the other day and lined up, and then I was behind the customer in front, and the girl went on to explain that the coffee machine's not working.
Coffee club.
Just from behind, I said, excuse me, can you just clarify, your coffee machine's not working? And I said, she said, yeah, that's right. I said, that's okay, I'll just try and find a coffee club or something.
That would never happen in Fremantle.
My coffee machine.
So basically it's just club.
Yeah.
You know what, though? If anyone around the area wants to really impress Ross, start sending coffees over. Oh, you know what I mean? See if you can become his new haunt.
Yes, a Mexican salad. Send one his way.
Yeah, no carbs, thanks.
No carbs. Essentially a burrito without the bread.
That's right. Now, Ross, I want to ask you about the new recruits. There's a few of them that are all listed to play this weekend. What are your expectations?
I'll always get your money's worth. Shorty, don't you? I'm about to take off again. Yeah, who would you like to know about?
I know his questions are annoying, aren't they, Ross?
See what we have to put up with on a daily basis.
Well, of
right?
course, McCarthy kicked six in the last game, and everyone was like, oh, here we go.
That
here we
go. Remember him?
We're on. Mental health issues. Yeah. Who was it, McCarthy?
Yeah,
look, he's been a pleasure, really. There was a lot of noise around Cam. He legitimately was missing his family, disconnected, and it can be difficult when you move away from home as a young man. And he's come back, he's, settled in at home, and he trains incredibly hard, and it was a bonus he kicked six. We'd love him to kick six every week, but we know that's not going to happen. But, he's only 21, he's got real attributes, and he's shown really good character, so he's going to be a really good player for a long period of time for us.
Yeah, excellent. All right, well, we better let you go.
Yeah, that's all right. Have we muzzled Shawnee, he could go forever.
I got another few questions. I want to talk about the defence, obviously, that you're in charge with. You told me you were going to tighten them up the other week. I remember that.
Okay, have you tightened up the defence?
But I know how to tighten up defence. So, yeah, Sean Hamley. I always get his name wrong. Joel Hamley. He's been good. Michael Johnson's back up and about. Weller's been down there. So, look, we think we'll really improve in a lot of areas. We're aiming high. We certainly don't want to limit ourselves, and we aim to improve.
Oh, you sound a bit bored with us now, Ross. I'm just going to
correct.
Oh, Sean ruined it with his serious questions. Here we are having fun talking about burrito bowls, and then you have to go and ruin it, Sean.
I just thought, footy segment.
Ross doesn't come on this show to talk about football. You know that.
I see Sean walking down the street. I just pull the blinds a bit.
Can I ask him about the defence again?
No wonder.
This is Nathan, Nat and Sean.
Tom Gleeson.
Yes, I'm
welcome
here.
Back.
Thanks. Oh, thank you so much. I'm happy to be here. I always turn up.
Yes.
And I get invited on and then I turn up. That's what I do. I'm very polite. Everyone knows that.
I just want to congratulate you in person about Hard Quiz. It's one of the best shows on TV. It's so funny, mate.
Oh, thank you so much. Oh, there's nothing better than sort of quizzing ordinary folk and just ripping into them.
And having a go at them and you go hard and I love it. And then they try and have a go at you and it doesn't work.
It doesn't work. And also you watch normal quiz shows, like you watch Family Feud, some low rating nonsense like that. and then Grant Daniels just lovely to all the contestants.
Yeah.
Why?
We don't want to see that. But the other thing about your show is the contestants and their strangely peculiar topics of passion.
Yeah, that's right. And actually, at the moment, auditions are actually open. If anyone wants to apply, we're doing a second series of Hard Quiz.
So you have to have a special subject.
Yeah, you've got to have a special subject, Dungeons and Dragons.
Mine's Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, that'd be perfect. Yeah,
I think one of my favourite ones was the girl that her special subject was the entire career of French tennis player Richard Gasquet.
Yes, that's right.
It's so peculiar that somebody would focus all their attention on that.
I know. She was a stalker. You could tell. She said that she once met him and he didn't seem very conversational, didn't talk much. And I told her that was probably because he was frightened of you and wanted
you're
you to
terrified.
Go away.
Holding a knife.
Now, if you're following Tom on Twitter, you can check out his latest Hard Chat with Grant Denyer, which is so funny. You really go for people's throats in this thing. Do you get anxious beforehand about, because Grant was a bit of fun.
He was
you've
right
gone
fun.
People.
Yeah, I went him really hard, but he gives as good as he gets.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I don't really get anxious about it because I think I don't have a soul.
Yeah.
So what I do is I just I just stare at them and I just rip. I think I'm a sociopath, so okay. I think it doesn't really hurt
you're
me
very
at all.
Well qualified.
Yes. I went to boarding school when I was 11. See, so I've got a lot. That's so I'm used to abusing people all day every day. See, that's what happened. Like you'd wake up and someone like, "Nice head, mate." Yeah, thanks, mate. I haven't had breakfast yet. So
after breakfast, this head really comes into its own.
Tom, were your folks from the family? Are you originally from the country?
So I went to boarding school, and that's you had to, you know, that's all we did all day. Yeah, so you had to do that to survive.
So imagine after school, because I always wondered this, when you're at boarding school, the bell goes and everything, can you just run around and just go for it around the school facilities and do whatever
you
want?
Yeah, that's right. One of the benefits of boarding school is there's no commute. Because you're at school. So
and at home.
You would wake up at 8:30, have breakfast and be in class at 9. That was a benefit.
That's brilliant.
And then after school, you were still at school. I mean, that was the depressing part.
And the fact that, you know, your family didn't want you.
On the weekends, if your family doesn't take you home.
Yeah. And they don't. What do you do
on the weekends?
We used to just roam around the city. This is in Sydney where I went. We used to go to the movies and, where we weren't supposed to, but that's what me and my brother used to do. We also used to scale the walls at midnight and sneak out into the suburbs. That was exciting.
And what would you do when you got to the suburbs?
Smoke. Now, obviously, I don't do that anymore.
So hardcore.
And it was only tobacco, obviously. Yes, it was a long time ago. Yeah. It was the 90s.
How many suburbs away did you think it was safe to smoke from the school?
Oh, it was only just a one suburb radius was all that was needed.
Right. So were your family farmers, and why didn't you go down that path?
Yeah, I didn't go down that path because it's because it's hard work, doesn't it? It's a lot harder than showbiz. That's why I didn't do it. I didn't want to be for a long time, but my dad was very smart as a farmer. He said, "Son, if there's anything you're ever going to do in your life, don't be a farmer. It's a terrible idea.
Is the farm still in the family?
It's miserable. Get out while you can."
Is the farm still in the family?
No, it's long sold. Yeah, so my parents now they live on the coast.
Yeah,
they run a little motel.
Do they?
Yes.
What is it?
Yeah, it's called Kalindo at Marimbula, and they run it, and they've got signs on everything. They're the kind of place where you go in and
light switch.
Yeah, light on, off.
Yeah. Skirting board.
Yep. Above the towel, we care about the environment.
Of course. Oh, yes.
So if you care about the environment too, please leave your
and
towel
also
on the rack.
Bottom line.
Yeah, yes. Just put up a sign saying, "Can't be arsed washing your towel."
Yes, exactly.
Dad, be honest.
This is Nathan, Nat and Sean.
If anyone wants to go on Hard Quiz, hardquizcasting.com.au is where you can apply. I want to do this.
If you don't know what you're talking about, I view a couple of episodes, so you get a bit
so
of a
funny.
Gist.
At the end of it, there's a big brass Hard Quiz mug. Yeah. Do they really get to do you have many of them? Or
you get limited edition.
I thought there was only one.
No, limited edition. Oh, there's one that looks really good on set. We keep that one. But they get a big brass mug to take home.
Wow. And that's it. That's the prize pool.
That's the prize. You get the mug, and it's become a tradition that often I'd ask the winner what they're going to do with the mug. I remember one woman, she said that she would use it to drain the sump on her car. Another person said they're going to piss in it. Some said they're going to drink a coffee, and that was all funny, right?
Yeah.
But then the show goes to air, and so now they're all on social media taking photographs of what they said they're going to do with their mug. So everyone's desecrating the mug.
No respect.
Hey, Tom, I want to ask you, I didn't know you were in that band Fantastic Leslie. Are you still part of that? What do you do? Do you play an instrument? Are you a singer? What's the go?
He's the electric triangle.
Yeah, no, I used to play drums in that band a long time ago. The keyboard player has gone on to play with Paul Kelly now.
Oh.
So he's good.
He's
still going. Yeah, yeah. And the guitarist in that band was Andrew Hansen, who's now in The Chaser.
Oh, yes, yes.
And the bass player
was Sandra Sully.
No. the bass player works for BBC World, actually. He's on air there. So essentially, we were very unsuccessful as a band, and as soon as we split up, we came good. We're better on our own.
Have you been asked to join anybody else and get involved anywhere along the road?
Yeah.
Drum, like Def Leppard, perhaps? You know, the guy's only got the one arm.
Because you've got two arms.
Take him, surely.
Yeah.
Could come in and then there'd be three arms going at it. Sometimes I play. Yeah, I've still got my drum kit set up in my lounge room. So, yeah, I like playing still, but I haven't played for a while. And that band, I mean, it wasn't that successful. I think we got radio play once. I was driving
Did
along
you?
In the car and I heard our song and I'm like, we've made it. But what I didn't realise is that was the only time we ever got played on radio.
Did you split the royalty?
The one time I heard it in the car,
we've made
was
it.
The only time it ever got played.
We made it once.
Yeah. Well, I thought that was it. Well, that was amazing. I pulled over the car, rang my mum. I thought, this is it. We're going to go to number one.
It's amazing that you heard it. That's brilliant. Considering it was only played once.
It was a statistical anomaly that I heard. It was completely improbable.
All right, well, everyone, everything that John does is great. Remember, when you're up in Queensland, the Colindo Mirimbula Holiday Apartments.
Mirimbula. Yes.
Mirimbula.
Mirimbula.
Got some great features there. Large in-ground solar heated swimming pool. Yes. Delightful courtyard, and I've seen it.
That's right. Free Wi-Fi. But also, if you do have sand on your feet when you're coming in from the beach, make sure you rinse your feet before you get into the pool.
There's a sign.
There's a massive sign. It's actually about three paragraphs about why you should rinse your feet. No, I'm serious.
So these signs, rinse them. Yeah. Are they like printed out A4 pieces of paper?
Yeah, printed out.
A plastic sleeve?
Laminated.
Laminated.
On the back of every toilet door, there is a sign that says, sand problems. And then lists all the problems with sand.
Sand
it
problems.
Gets in the pot. Shake your clothes before you put them in the washing machine. It'll break the dryer. Yeah, it's very detailed.
What are your parents' names?
My favourite line from the sand sign is, the robot is struggling too. Now, that's robot? Just what my parents
what do you
call
mean?
Well, they call their creepy crawly. They call it the robot. But no one else knows that.
No, they don't.
You could have checked in and you may not even know there's a pool. You're like some robot struggling. Yeah. Like,
you're there for 2 weeks. We'll stay another day until we see the android. This is super exciting. Yeah. This is Nathan, Nat and
Sean. The Australian Grand Prix is on this weekend. I can't wait to see how Daniel Ricciardo goes this season in the F1s. Perth's own, of course. And what about this? Adam Gilchrist, our good friend, he is one of the hosts for Channel 10. We haven't spoken to Gilly for ages. How about we give him a call?
Hello.
Hello. We'd like to order some cricket, please.
Oh, no, I don't deal in that anymore.
Okay. Okay. What about some Grand Prix, thank you?
Yeah, that's right. That's good for the appetite, lad. Yeah.
Well, when we think Grand Prix, we think you.
That's what we thought, Gilly.
Always. Naturally. It's just your go-to man, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I'm more so reading it as the Grand Prix.
Thank you.
Hey. Yeah. Gilly, so you're over in Melbourne. You're getting ready for this Grand Prix this weekend. It's a sensational weekend. And good old Daniel Ricciardo flying the flag for WA.
Certainly is. Are we on?
Yeah,
why not? We're always on with you.
I just never know. You guys are just such natural. I don't know if I'm in an interview or if you just talk to me like that normally. But hey, look, yeah, of course, the boy from Duncraig, he's done good, hasn't he? He's already carved out a very formidable career. But I think this year, with all the changes, and we don't want to get too complex with the details of what's changed in the cars and the aerodynamics, but with all the changes, I think he's a red hot chance, not just here in Melbourne, but over the course. For a shake of the title.
Okay, yeah. So say if he does amazingly right, and then at the end he invites you up on the stage with him and then invites you to do a shoey out of his shoe, would you drink alcohol out of Daniel Ricciardo's shoe?
No.
Would you drink alcohol out of your own shoe?
Yeah, definitely.
He's been there before.
That's acceptable, but when you start having to share other people's smells and odors, it's not really good.
So you've got standards.
I asked him last night at a function, I said, does it taste like it smells? And he said, it depends on how quickly you can slam it down. He said, if you pour it in and then slam it down quickly, you don't absorb any of the odorous qualities of the food.
If it's there too long, you don't want
it hanging around marinating.
Because when we were in the Arise Racing, when we were doing that, we felt how hot we were after we got out of that stuff. How long is he in a car for when he's doing one of those races?
Oh, an hour?
Just under 2 hours. Oh, about 2 hours. Hour 40.
Come on. And we know how hot they get in there. That would be disgusting.
Oh, no, not good. But mind you, if it means you're standing on the top step on the podium with a big trophy and a filthy big check coming your way, you'd probably do it. Yes.
Oh, definitely. Hey, Gilly, you've checked out Daniel's Red Bull, his new car. Does it look amazing?
It looks bloody good.
It does. They all look amazing this year. I think for the motor enthusiasts, they'll sort of see a bit of a throwback to a blend of the 80s and 90s. So they're huge. They're bigger cars. They're about 20 to 25% bigger.
Oh,
bigger tyres, more power, faster through the corners. So it really is, they're impressive looking machines, and the amount of fine detail that goes into it is extraordinary. So it's a big team, over 1,000 sort of people in each race team, and it all comes down to one bloke sitting in a car.
Well, you know what, I was super excited when I was given my Mustang from Linford Motors to drive, and then I went onto your Instagram and I said to the guys when I saw this picture, Gilly been given one of these to drive?
The Jaguar.
Are you kidding me?
Very fortunate to be cruising around in a Jaguar at the moment. Yes, I am. Thanks for mentioning that.
How does it corner, Gilly?
Oh, corners beautifully, mate. All within the speed limit.
Yeah, it's very safely and responsibly, right?
It's very, very, very privileged to be given that opportunity, and a fine drive it is. So, except Mel keeps telling me she's stealing it off me. So, and I'm away for a couple of days covering this Grand Prix. I think she's having her own Grand Prix around the streets of Subiaco.
Of course you would. Of course you would. It looks a treat.
Oh, yeah, it's really good. Is it, did you get automatic or manual?
Automatic,
mate. Autos.
Yeah.
It only come in autos.
Well, top level, yeah, only on autos.
Really?
For sure. Definitely.
Really? I thought top levels would be manual as well.
Because it's a performance car.
Yeah, it's a performance car. Are
well,
you sure?
Good question. We'll check that out, yeah.
What's your Mustang?
I didn't say anything about being a performance driver. I'm certainly not that.
Yeah.
You had a manual in the Mustang.
It's a four-cylinder, but it's a manual.
Yeah, turbo. Turbo, no. It feels like it's 12 cylinders. I don't know. No cars.
What colour is it again, mate?
Black with silver racing stripes in the middle to make it go faster.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I see yours.
I'll keep an eye out.
Thank you.
I'll pull over to the side when I see you coming.
Now, Gilly, it's been a pretty good. The season of cricket just finished pretty quickly for you. Now you're into the Grand Prix. What did you do in the meantime?
I managed to have a very nice bit of time at home, actually, in Perth. I have been home since the final of the Big Bash, obviously, and the semi-final, so that meant I had a few extra days compared to everyone else on the commentary team that I was at home in Perth. So about 8 weeks at home, and I must admit, Mel and the kids were sort of looking at me saying, you got anywhere to go, mate?
Yeah, of course.
That's the longest stint I've had at home, I reckon, through my whole entire adult life. So,
wow.
Yeah, it was really, really nice, and obviously caught up on a bit of the cricket activity over in India, which has been an enthralling series. You know, maybe even you might have been interested, Nath. I'm not sure.
Oh, I know. I'm super interested. I'm not keeping a scrapbook of it.
Gilly, before we let you go, obviously the fourth test is getting underway this weekend. Can you see the Aussies winning? I believe it's going to be quite friendly to the pace attack.
It is the wicket up there in Dharamshala, right up in the foothills of the Himalayan mountains. It's such spectacular countryside. It's one of my favourite grounds in the whole world, and I've played a few years there in the IPL. As far as characteristics of the wicket goes, that wicket is most like Australian cricket pitches. So that doesn't mean it's going to be produced like that. I think they can probably turn it into a bit more of a subcontinental dust bowl just as easily. But regardless of which way they go, I really think our guys are a genuine chance. Just the confidence that they have built throughout this series and the momentum that they bring, albeit from a drawn test, but you could almost say it's a winning draw, the way that Sean Marsh and Peter Hanscom knuckled down at the back of that game. They were jubilant about that, and they'll carry a lot of momentum. So I'm expecting really positive results.
So if we draw this, we retain the trophy, is that right?
Yes, yeah,
wow.
That's right.
So we don't even have to win.
So. Yeah.
Only if we draw one of their French girls, Natalie.
Yeah.
Sorry, Titanic, everyone.
Yeah, but Nat, I'd guess that at the start of the series, the Australian team would have taken a drawn series as a victory. But now, this far in and the history of the three tests, I think they'll be really disappointed if they don't come away with a win.
All right, bring it on.
This is Nathan, Nat and Sean.
Now, it was years ago. Remember, Sean?
And I remember.
For some reason, I didn't know why it was on the History Channel, but suddenly came across it and then started watching it. And then, Sean, that was the day we became obsessed with this. This
says it all, this music.
It's Vikings. And we have got Rollo, the man himself, Clive Standen, with us right now. Hi, Clive.
Hey, how you doing?
Oh, you are our hero.
First of all, welcome to Perth. You know, you've just got off a plane. Welcome.
I literally just got off a plane an hour ago. I just checked into my hotel, and you're the first people I'm talking to in lovely Perth.
Hey, Clive, how you feeling, mate? I hope you're up the pointy end and we're able to have a couple of drinks and just snooze off. Are you going all right?
I am. Really good, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So you're here for OzCon, everybody, tomorrow and Sunday at the Perth Convention Exhibition Centre. Go and check it out on there every year. It's fantastic.
Yep.
But, Clive, I mean, you're everything. Thank you so much for Vikings. And you know what? It's really odd because I've seen a couple of episodes now of Taken, your new show, which is fantastic. And, you know, everyone should get onto that. But I did not recognise you in Taken from Vikings. God, you look different.
Ah, well, that's the key, I suppose, isn't it? That's the best compliment I can get.
Yeah. I heard also you're one of the Olsen twins. That's amazing. Can you confirm or deny?
Well, no, I like to keep a bit of mystery in my life.
I mean, that is a surprising turn.
Hey, Clive, I was also checking out that obviously last week was St. Paddy's Day. There was a picture of Guinness on your Instagram. Did you get right amongst it, mate?
I do. I mean, every year. I mean, filming in Ireland, Vikings is filmed just outside Dublin. So for the last 5 years, yeah, we've been indoctrinated into being part of the St. Paddy's Day preparations and celebrations. So, yeah, Guinness. Guinness was never really my drink of choice before I started Vikings, but now it's just become, you know, part and parcel of the business for me.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Hey, when you start Vikings, right? Because when I first saw it and when it's on the History Channel, I thought, oh, it's going to educate me. I thought it was like going to be a documentary. I was like, oh, this is so stupid. And then I watched it and I thought, this is amazing. When you first found about this gig and heard it was going to be made for the History Channel, did you think it was going to take off as much as what it has?
No, not at all. I mean, I've always been interested in the Vikings, but what the draw to me from, you know, just getting the first couple of episodes through and Michael Hirst, the writer's kind of treatment on it, was that it was going to be the first time that this heritage and this race had been explored on TV in a kind of fair light, in a discursive light, and that was what interested me to start with. I thought it'd be more of a, you know, with any a few people would be interested in watching, you know, this historical, as historically accurate as a drama can be, about the Vikings. But I, looking back on it now, you think about it, it's very different to any period drama. It
touches
so many different demographics, interests, with the action and the adventure and the battles, and then you've got a bit of history and with the
mythology,
gods and monsters they believe in. It's almost like a fantasy. You know, the Game of Thrones is the imagination of just one writer, whereas Vikings is not the imagination.
And you know what? I've said this to people. Some people don't like Game of Thrones because of the mythical dragons and all that sort of stuff. And I said, if you don't like it for that, watch Vikings, because you'll get all the same feelings you want, just without the dragons.
You get the killings and debauchery. That's exactly what we're all after. Hey, Clive, the position of Rollo, was that always what you were going for when you got interested in the Vikings?
No, actually, when I auditioned, I auditioned to play Ragnar.
Yeah,
right. And I did something like 7 auditions to play Ragnar, and they couldn't find who they wanted. And to be fair, this Aussie bum came along out of nowhere.
very ugly man.
Nailed it. Mm. And you can't think of anyone better to play Ragnar, but he came in right at the end. And Rollo was written to be Ragnar's cousin. So the one thing that we've taken real historical license with is they weren't brothers in history. They lived nearly 100 years apart.
Okay.
But Michael wrote him to be this 50-year-old cousin. So when I heard I didn't get Ragnar and this Calvin Klein model did, I was a little bit put out.
You know what, though? You're going to be happy to lose that to that, then. You know what I mean?
You know what I mean? He's the best guy. And this season just gone. I mean, this last season on TV, it's been the most amazing performance from Travis. But in all seriousness, he kind of helped me get the part as well, because I think they realised that they got Travis wanting to take Ragnar in that direction, and Michael offered me the part of Rollo and completely changed it overnight, made him a brother, made him younger, so because it's far more interesting having these two people play off against each other.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Now, you left school when you were very young and joined like a sword fighting and jousting troop.
I did.
What did your parents think about that as a career move?
I don't know. We came from a bit of a small town, but my parents have always been, I mean, maybe it's just a generational thing, but when I grew up, I was running, jumping, climbing trees. I was outside all the time anyway. So I was pretty much beating the hell out of my brothers with wooden swords and climbing trees anyway. And this was just someone was going to pay her son to do it.
So yeah.
It wasn't much difference.
Yeah, but, I mean, good skills that have come in handy now, obviously.
I mean, I come from a history of a violent brother as well. Yes. He used to sit in a tree and, like, throw ninja stars at me and use a crossbow and stuff like that. So I completely understand.
Nathan's very light on his feet.
I want to know about your experience with Australia, because there's an article that I found, 30 Things You Need to Know About Clive Standen, right? Mm. And this was February 17, 2016. And one of the questions was, what is your TV guilty pleasure? And your answer was MasterChef Australia.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
It was just on TV. My wife and I kind of just suddenly, you know, get together and we just flick on the channel and we gave it like 5 minutes. We always liked MasterChef England, but we weren't religiously following it. And somehow the Australian one just caught our attention. We got really into that.
So Big Matt Preston, you like that? And George?
It was about a year ago now, wasn't it? We'd let the kids stay up. We all watched it together.
Oh, it had far more of a kind of like, stay up late and watch MasterChef.
Hey, we can hook you up with Matt Preston if you want to go and do a tour of MasterChef while they're filming.
Where is it filmed in Perth?
No, Sydney.
Yeah, in Sydney.
Are you excited for a second?
Well, we don't have anything in Perth except for you at the moment.
Hey, Clive, I'm interested in your accent, or lack of, from being from Northern Ireland. It's pretty harsh, generally. My mates are from there, and yours isn't that strong.
Now we're talking.
I always think the funniest word to say in Northern Irish is the word power shower. Because they pretty much just say pressure. Pressure.
Yeah, you'd need to hear it in context to be able to figure it out.
So what is that? Just you went away young, went to school.
I was born there. My dad was in the army, in the veterinary corps over there. So I was brought up there till about 5 or 6. But my parents separated, so I moved over to Melton Mowbray in Leicestershire in England, and never saw that scumbag again. And I got brought up in England, so. That's going to be a, so I suppose, and also drama school helps, knock the accent out of you.
Can you pick up accents fairly easily? Like if you were to play an Australian as you're going to, or an American, can you switch between them really easily?
Well, the American one came really easily. I mean, in my new TV series Taken, I'm doing an American accent.
You've got a great accent in that.
Well, I think we all, I mean, maybe Australians as well, we grew up with a lot of American TV. Yeah. It's very hard for Americans to suddenly pull off an English accent because they don't watch Downton Abbey's from the age of, But all of my TV shows when I was a kid growing up were American, and it just kind of becomes the accent. It's almost second nature. Australian's going to be a bit more of a challenge for me. I'm going to have to, well, I'm out here in Perth, I'm probably going to be finding myself mimicking and copying people.
I did work
with Travis for 5 years, but he has a very unique Aussie accent.
Yeah, he does.
Okay, so Ozcon, okay. What are you going to be doing over the weekend? You're going to be signing autographs, of course. Are you going to be doing one of those panels talks?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that, doing a question and answer, having to field questions away from Vikings season 5, because Rollo is back in Vikings in season 5, but I'm not sure how much I'm allowed to talk about it.
Can you just tell us the entire plot?
He takes a bit of a different route, though, I believe.
Yes. He does, yeah. It's nice, Michael. This is one of the gifts of having this character change at the last minute from this 50-year-old to 30-year-old, because I've been able to grow older as the series goes on. So nearly every season, I've got to reinvent this character. There's this Swedish proverb that Michael Hurst and our very first director of the very first episode, Johan Rink, gave me, which translates basically to everyone wants to be loved, and if they can't be loved, they want to be admired, and if they can't be admired, they want to be feared, and if they can't be feared, then they're willing to be hated. And that's kind of the track I've been going with Rollo. Season 1, you kind of hate the guy.
Yeah.
In season 2, you kind of love to hate him. And season 3 starts to kind of, as Ragnar starts to fall from grace and do these questionable things, you start to rooting for Rollo against your will. And in 4, even though he's maybe not a Viking anymore, you kind of see the man has actually, grabbed life by the balls and has actually kind of become, a decent person and a decent husband. And, So in 5 it kind of gets reinvented again, and he's a very different man and a very different part of his life.
By the way, how quickly did he pick up the French accent role?
From going from Viking, I could never do the French accent when I was a kid anyway, so there was no acting required.
Because he's like a Viking that doesn't even know anything, and then suddenly he's fluent
King of Normandy.
In French.
Hey Clive, I've got to wonder about over the weekend when you're doing the panel show and people get to ask you questions, you're going to really have to be on your game because you've got the super fans there that will know every detail of every episode.
Oh, but the thing is, Vikings has become a part of my life. I'm so passionate about that culture as well. I'm not filming right now, but I still am interested to hear any news that comes out about Vikings. Any kind of article which is about some boat being found in some lake in Scandinavia or whatever, it just gets my attention. I'm pretty passionate about it, and I'd love to kind of have a good old tete-a-tete with someone that kind of loves Scandinavian culture.
Well, you're forever linked to it now, Clive. There's no getting away from it.
This is Nathan, Nat, and Sean.